All right. As promised, we're joined right now by a national NBA writer for the Los Angeles Times, longtime friend of the program, and the man who closes out a show that had the two-time Daytona 500 champ and the two-time NCAA basketball champ, yet is Dan Wojcicki, who is closing out the program. Dan, welcome back to the jungle. How are you?
Jim, what an impressive intro for me today by having, you know, such... legendary race car driver, a top-tier college basketball coach, and now you get me a one-year national NBA basketball writer. This is a real thrill for me.
You earned it. Let's be very clear about this. Denny Hamlin was on, Jay Wright was on, and you, Dan, are closing out the program. Let me start right here. You were in Charlotte for the All-Star weekend. Overall, I got to ask you, what was that experience like? What was the vibe like?
I thought it was a really good weekend. It's normally All-Star, in years past, has been sort of like a cesspool of rumors, because the trade deadline would come right afterwards, and they've changed this now. I think this is the second year where the trade deadline passes before the weekend. So it's a more relaxed vibe. I think Charlotte isn't the most exciting city in the world, and the weather wasn't great, but I think the league put on a pretty good show. I know the game on Sunday, for as far as All-Star games go, was a good second half. I thought All-Star Saturday, despite the dunk contest kind of flopping, I thought the rest of the night was really good, and you know, you got to see I enjoyed watching, because I like to watch LeBron interact with everybody, right, and watch it through sort of this lens of, what does it all mean? There are no surprises with this dude. So when he goes and shakes hands with Kyrie Irving, like, what's 10 steps down the line for him? And it was a really fun prism to kind of watch everything over the weekend.
We are talking to Dan Wojcicki. Dan, I'm glad you brought that up. Like, you had a piece that you worked on over the weekend, and the question was, is LeBron still the NBA's best player? Before we get into who's next, when you talk to players in Charlotte, what's their view of LeBron at this stage of his career?
I think there's a respect for him that, obviously, from the body of work, right? Like, that it's hard to be the best player in the world. Danny Green said it. It's hard to be the best player in the world for 15 years, and he's done it. That being said, you look around the league, and it's hard to ignore what all these other guys are doing, right? The way that James Harden has carried the Rockets is a very LeBron-ish type thing to do. Paul George has really quietly had an amazing MVP-caliber season. Kawhi Leonard in Toronto has done some really special stuff, not to mention the fact that you might have two more dynamic players than all of these guys in Golden State, and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. And then there's the other guy, right? There's the guy in Milwaukee that everybody's excited about, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. LeBron is in this conversation with all of them, and I think, you know, if you put a gun to everybody's head, they would still lean towards LeBron James, but we're getting closer and closer to he's going to have to prove it versus it's just sort of reputation, right? And that's what I think is really interesting, is sort of, if LeBron can't lift the Lakers to the postseason this year, if he can't overcome kind of the three-game, the three-game deficit between the Lakers right now and the eighth seed, is he still the greatest player in the world? That, to me, that feels like something the greatest player in the world would do, because I feel like we've seen him do harder things in the Eastern Conference, carrying Cavs teams to the finals that really had no business being there.
Dan Wojcicki joining us right now. I agree. So I mean, the point is, like, when he flips the switch, he might still be that guy, but we'll see what happens when he goes to flip the switch. But if he's no longer that guy and we move on to the next guy, talking to players in Charlotte, is that next guy Durant, or does that title go to Giannis?
I think people feel like Giannis has a chance to get to a higher place than Durant. I think today Durant is the better player, and I think that is he's a weird guy to talk about with other players, because I think, you know, the Warriors decision tainted, I think, a little bit of his accomplishments. The fact that he's won back-to-back finals MVPs, the fact that, I mean, you watch him play in that All-Star game, and he just is different. You know, he moves differently, he looks differently, he shoots it differently. He's a different dude on the court. And I think, but for whatever reason, he wasn't the name that came up most. It was Giannis. And I think the reason why, Jim, is that you look at Giannis Antetokounmpo and you look at what he's accomplished this year with the Bucks, the best record in the league, and you look at his stats and you see, like, oh, no, like, this guy is still only shooting 22% from three. This guy is still shooting, you know, barely over 70% from the free throw line. When that stuff fills out, and you know, there's reason to think it will, because look at how far he's already come. It's like, no one knows what that's going to look like. You know, I mean, that's, you have guys talking about this guy at 24 years old as a future. Mike Conley, to me, you know, said he's going to be the future face of the NBA. And it's one of those things where no one really knows what his ceiling is, and it's sort of terrifying/exciting. Terrifying for everybody else, super exciting for the Milwaukee Bucks and their people. I mean, the people that are around him every day just marvel, and they're like, this guy is going to be something. We've never seen anything like this. And for the league to have an international player be this transcendent, I think, is only going to help them, you know, for the next 10, 15, 20 years.
I think you're right. It's amazing. I mean, he just turned 24, and to your point, the guy's barely shooting 22% from the three. Once he starts to shoot it from out there, you can only imagine what a threat he'll be and how dangerous he already is. Let me ask you about something, another topic to break in a moment, but you wrote a piece for the fashion section about the East Bay catalog, which is something that I'm guessing a lot of people listening right now used to get. When did you first start getting it, and how much did you look forward to getting it every single time?
I mean, as long as I can remember, I think as long as, you know, I could convince my mom to make the call to the 1-800 number to get on the mailing list.
Right.
So maybe when I was 9 or something like that. It's the fun part about the East Bay catalog for me, Jim, was that I never knew I needed javelin shoes until I got the East Bay catalog. You know, I didn't know that. Oh, I'll never be a great triple jumper. I don't have the right cleats. I don't have the right spikes. And that's what I loved about it. You know, I would read it like it was important literature. And it was a really fun project to work on, because this is an experience I think a lot of people who played sports at a certain time in their lives, they all would just dive into this East Bay catalog and kind of just flip page after page. And the crazy thing is, like, most catalogs, right, like, you look at them once and you would toss it. For whatever reason, I would go back to it like something new would be in there, you know, like it would change or something like that,
right?
And of course it wouldn't, and you would get it 4 times a year, and I don't think I ever bought anything from it. I talked to my mom about it, and she says we did buy something. I don't remember at all, but I remember looking at it, and I think that's ultimately the point. It was a really fun nostalgia project, and the response to it has been great. I've heard from a bunch of people who worked in the company originally. It's being kind of the stories being passed around right now through East Bay execs who've retired and are living, I would say, high on the hog in, like, Wausau, Wisconsin or whatever.
Sure.
But, you know, I can only imagine what that lifestyle is like there right now. It was a special little company, and I think it had a huge impact on a ton of athletes.
Dan Wojcicki joining us. I could follow you up on that, but there's also something else I want to talk to you about. You've got a great series in the LA Times where you talk to players about the best games they've ever played.
Yeah.
Robin Lopez took it all the way back to his senior year in the Central Valley in San Joaquin Memorial versus Clovis West. That is so on topic. That is so great for Robin Lopez to say that. But why was that game so important to him?
I think what he remembered most was after the game, kind of driving by some girls and hanging the trophy out the window.
Right.
You know, like, kind of like the stupid stuff you do when you're 18. I mean, he remembered listening to a Michael Jackson song in the car with his brother and a buddy and just kind of waving the trophy as they drove down, you know, the freeway. And it's been fun. Like, the series, the thing I like best about it, Jim, is, like, every once in a while I'll talk to somebody and they'll give me a totally unverifiable game. And I like that better because it kind of becomes like a fishing story. Like, Danilo Gallinari earlier this year told me a story, I think, where his team in Italy played a rival province in some sort of international or national tournament. And Gallinari scored 52 of his team's, like, 58 points, you know, when he was 11 years old.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's like these Kevin Durant told me a story that there was this guy named Tree that everybody in, like, Northern Virginia, D.C. area was afraid of. This big dude, right? Like, everybody would talk about Tree. And, like, he played him in an AAU tournament, wrecked him. And then he kind of was like, oh, yeah, no one's going to be able to ever guard me. And it's just like these little moments that these guys remember. When you ask them, it's such a broad question. Some guys, like, have no answer to it, right? It's just too hard for them. But, you know, guys like Robin Lopez, Kevin Durant, some of the more introspective guys, I think it's been fun to kind of hear what their moments were that stick out to them. And you just never know where you're going to hear. You never know if it's going to be Michael Jackson. You never know if it's going to be Rondo remembering people in a game in Italy whistling at him instead of clapping. It's just these little nuggets that kind of stick in these guys' brains.
You know, they're so great, and you're right. You never know exactly what you're going to get or whether or not you can verify it. Dan, when you tell a story like that and you lay it out like that, it makes me think of, like, I don't know, Ron Artest telling this story.
One of my friends, you know, he's playing basketball. They was winning the game. It was so competitive. They threw a piece of leg from a table, and they threw it. It went right through his heart, and he died right on the court. So, like, I'm accustomed to playing basketball really rough. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know if that's true or not, Dan. I just choose to believe that it is.
That's for next year's most violent game ever series. Ron will be very, very, very early on that list.
That is incredible. Dan Wojcicki joining us for another moment or so. One of the other big stories around the All-Star break was, of course, Anthony Davis and where he might end up. Now he's saying in an interview that all 29 teams are on his list and that he does not have a preferred destination. Do you buy that on any level?
Kind of. I think it was a bad PR weekend for Anthony Davis if the end goal was to end up with the Los Angeles Lakers, which it certainly seemed like that was the goal at the trade deadline, right? Between him and Rich Paul and Clutch Sports, they had kind of poisoned the well for everybody else, saying no matter what's happening, he's going to go to free agency, and getting kind of the narrative out there that it was really only going to be the Lakers. He didn't want to go to Boston. His dad said something about how he didn't want him to go to Boston, and it kind of wanted to put pressure on New Orleans to make the deal now, because come summer, there's going to be no market for him because he's not going to want to sign anywhere long term except for the Lakers, right? And so when he goes out and says things like, I'm all about winning, I just want to win, it doesn't matter where I go, market size doesn't matter. We'll just take, for instance, the Milwaukee Bucks, who don't have the assets to trade for him. However, let's say for some reason they can get Anthony Davis to Milwaukee, even though it's not Los Angeles. If he's truly all about winning, that's a situation where he could go there and win for the next decade. Boston is a situation, if Kyrie Irving stays, that he could go there and win for the next decade with the young talent that they have, and they do have the assets to get him. It just opens up the doors to more suitors, and I think that works against the Lakers because, New Orleans has already said no to kind of the Lakers' best package already. Come July when they get to offer it again, what's going to change? And if the market is just bigger for him, I think that hurts the Lakers. And if the end goal of this weekend was to get Anthony Davis to the Lakers, they failed. I think when he said, it was interesting because he talked on the podium before he went on NBA TV and said 29 teams, and he had kind of said, no, Boston's on the list. And he had another chance where he got asked specifically about it. He's like, well, I never said they're not on my list. And it felt like he was backpedaling, to the point where he said 29 teams are on my list, which must feel great if you're a New Orleans fan to be the only team that's out. It's such an interesting thing because guys like him don't hit the market that often. And when they do hit the market, everybody wants to be involved. And if you just have to win around him, I think you're going to get more offers. And that's not good news for the Lakers.
As I mentioned, on a day where we have a two-time Daytona 500 champ, a two-time national champ as a head coach in college basketball, it's Dan Wojcicki who's closing the program out, a national NBA writer for the LA Times and a good friend of the show. Dan, great job and great to have you back. Appreciate it so much.
Jim, great to be back, man. Let's do this soon.
You got it. Dan, nice job. Well done. Extremely well-liked and well-respected in his business. Dan Wojcicki.